I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guests on this episode of Into Music are Elia Baker and Jeff Morris of the Brooklyn-based duo Charming Disaster. Formed in 2012, Charming Disaster's latest release, The Double, is out May 16th and features songs that, in the words of Bisker and Morris, are inspired by nature, mortality, magic, ritual, and literary genres ranging from science fiction to Victorian horror. The pair discuss this new recording, as well as a little bit of Charming Disaster's history, on this episode of Into Music, and that conversation is coming up now. At this point, is there like a, is there kind of like a standard rhythm, like, oh, we know now it's time to go in and make one, or they just kind of songs start coming and you follow them?
Yeah, they usually kind of collect as we, you know, we're always writing songs, and kind of when we have enough an album's worth, we kind of think about when the next.
Even before then, like sometimes we'll have like a cluster of songs that feel like they're kind of ready, and it's a little easier to handle recording when there's not a full album's worth at a time. So I mean, like we've done most of our albums in like a few chunks, including this one. We had a few songs that we had kind of in the can for a while. Time Machine and Beautiful Night, we've been sitting on for a bit, partly because we recorded those at the same time that we recorded Stockholm Syndrome and Cherry Red, which we put out as singles in the last like year and a half. But we wanted to save the other two for the album. So yeah, it's usually kind of a cumulative process. We're always kind of doing everything at the same time. Like, we're not the kind of band that like we go into the studio and we decide to make a record and we make a record and then we tour the record and then we stop and then we like restart. We're like simultaneously booking the tour, playing the shows,
promoting the tour,
like writing the songs,
doing Kickstarters, making videos, you know. It's like
and when we record, we often kind of tack it onto our touring schedule, because we typically record with a collaborator who's based in outside of DC, and so sometimes our routing works out, or we make it work out such that at the beginning or at the end of a tour we'll have a few days in the studio.
When you kind of first started and you make the first record, a lot of people tell me that they don't know like there's ever going to be a second one. Did you know back then, like immediately, like, oh, this is going to continue?
No,
we didn't know.
No, but we kept like booking shows like in advance. We'd be like, well, we have to keep this project together till like July at least, because like we've got sure. that gig on the books.
Yeah, but you know, the longer we go, the more we're like, well, we'll probably keep it going another year.
Yeah, well, that's the secret. You like have to keep on just like putting like goalposts like farther and farther out, so that you then have to like keep going there.
Yeah, we're gonna play the Steampunk Festival next year. We have to stay.
Right? Yeah, we booked that's on the books. So yeah, we'll keep it going till then.
I want to move up to this record, but thinking just about the time that you've invested. So, you know, were there things that kind of surprised you about like, you know, how you find an audience? Because, you know, you talked about like touring, and that can go both ways, right? Like, it can be a complete nightmare, like nobody shows up, or it can be the kind of thing where it's like you have a great show, you get invited back, you go back 6 months later, and there's 10 times the people there or whatever, you know? So how was that, you know, as you continued, like as you saw the audience change or grow or whatever?
We've had a couple of very lucky things that have happened that we've been able to kind of push the advantage on. One was that very early on, we had a song featured on Welcome to Night Vale, which is a podcast beloved by lovers of the strange and unusual. And a lot of people kind of came to us through Night Vale very early in our careers, Charming Disaster. And so for a while, we would play shows in new places. And although there weren't like tons of people there, there would be like a few people where we'd be like, those are the Night Vale people. Yeah. Like, those are our people who came for this.
Yeah.
And in 2019, we got to open for the band Rasputina on an 8-show tour in the Midwest, which was really wonderful. And we gained a lot of like super fans through the Rasputina shows. Also because during the pandemic that followed shortly thereafter, we started doing weekly live streams, and a lot of the people who had first encountered us in
Sure.
November 2019 through the Rasputina shows, they started showing up to our live streams every week, and it became like really a community. And so that was a really surprising thing to us. Like we just didn't know what to do. We just canceled a ton of tour shows in 2020, and so we started doing these live streams, and
Like
it
immediately. Like I know a lot of other bands and other performers kind of turn to live streams eventually, and I think it just happened. It just worked out for us that we
Yeah,
were like
March
ready to do it.
13th, 2020, we were like, let's do a live stream, and then
Yeah.
it was every week for like the whole pandemic. So we did it just because like we didn't know what else to do for ourselves, and
Right.
it turned out that that was meeting a need for a lot of people who connected not just with us but with each other. Like we've seen friendships and even romances blossom through the community of the live stream. So that was really something special. I mean, as far as like the audiences and how they've developed over time in our touring travels, we have a very relationship-oriented approach to touring and to like all that we do, really. So the places that have been really successful for us, where we've seen audiences grow, are places where we've been able to connect with some existing community and like become like participate in it. So like that could be like the burlesque community in Asheville and in the Raleigh-Durham Triangle in North Carolina and in Richmond. There's circus community that we've connected with in Chicago and in Cleveland and even New York.
Don't forget puppets.
And puppets, yes, we for a non-puppet act,
Yeah.
we do a lot of puppet related shows. Neither one of us is a puppet, and yet
We swear.
so like that's really where the magic happens for us, especially if we're able to connect with more than one such community in the same place. Then like we start to see the audiences grow exponentially.
So that's interesting because that's kind of a, I don't know, for lack of a better term, it's sort of like, sticking with your strengths. Like once you've established that community, you're not chasing gigs in other places and hoping and praying that.
Oh no,
We
we
do
are.
that too.
No,
Oh, you
no.
do that
We are, but not at the expense of our core community, you
Yeah.
know. So like we are leaning, we're pretty niche, you know, and I think it would be a mistake for us to abandon the niche for a more kind of mainstream approach. But there's weirdos everywhere, and I think you don't have to be a weirdo to appreciate storytelling and musicality. And so you know, people who encounter us who might not expect to like our music based on how we dress, often find themselves very charmed by
Yeah. Children, we had a lot of
elderly
kids,
suburbanites.
elderly suburbanites. Like,
Totally.
it's a wide, we cast a wide net, it seems. Universal appeal.
People like being told stories too, and you
I
know,
do.
I think we're entertaining.
Well, yeah, there's that thing about, going to see a band as opposed to just going to hear them. It's like you want that interaction, you want some kind of show.
Sure, we think
Yeah,
so.
and we deliver that. We're pretty theatrical, and we're pretty interactive with the audience. You know, we address them directly, and we even make them help determine the set list a lot of the time.
I mean, we're only two people. We're trying to maximize all the things we can do with just two people, whether that's like, playing foot percussion, like Elliot plays the hi-hat, I play the bass drum, and along with the our instruments.
And
And
singing,
singing
it's
as
very
much as
complicated.
possible. Yeah. And we, what else could we do? We can kind of like engage the audience a little bit. We can kind of put on a show. So it's very much.
And we're funny. I mean,
Oh.
I'm funny.
I was going to say I was funny, but.
Yeah, but we do kind of a vaudevillian sort of approach to
Yeah.
our stage performances. So it's pretty fun for
But we
that.
can open for a large rock act. I mean, that's also we fit in there as
We're a
well.
large puppet show. We're very versatile.
But those puppets can get really large.
Some are really big.
I had like very little idea like how big the Puppet community is at this moment in time, but I have a colleague who is in that world, and he started explaining it to me, and I was like, how did I miss this?
Yeah, it's huge.
It's huge, but it's niche, but like a lot of the communities that we're connected to, they're pretty geographically dispersed, and so the communities are based more on affinity than on where you happen to live. And so we often, we were in Seattle and we met somebody at a show who was a belly dancer, and we were like, "Oh, like you don't know our friend so and so in Richmond, do you?" And she was like, "Oh yeah, of course I do." Because people who are belong to these affinity groups, they often travel to like attend or participate in festivals or events or performance opportunities all over the place. And so everybody kind of knows everybody, and it becomes a sort of post geography sort of existence where it's more about like what is your passion than like what is your location.
So kind of swinging back to this record, when you start putting together the songs and thinking about, okay, this eventually will be an album, are you looking to kind of connect them thematically, or do you just kind of let it be what it is and let the songs kind of guide you?
We let the songs be what they are, and kind of we try to work in service of the song as much as possible, whether that's instrumentation or like in writing it, like where does it need to go, where does it need to be, but we have interests and preoccupations and themes that kind of just come up subconsciously or very consciously, and so there is a cohesiveness to the album, to the albums, but it's not premeditated as like, oh, we need a song. Well, sometimes it is.
Sometimes it's premeditated, but
We need a song about this or that.
usually it's more like looking back and kind of doing interpretive work ourselves to be like how like
How
what
are these connected?
like a dream interpretation, like what's been going on under the surface that we see expressed in this music. The other thing is that when we get into the studio, because we're working on like although we write the songs one at a time generally, we record them together, and so like there's a connective tissue in the arrangements often where like a friend, so for instance on this record, a friend of mine gave me this shaker, like a hand percussion shaker that she had made out of these water chestnut pods, which are these like crazy looking people sometimes call them like devil pods. They're like really pointy. They grow like along the Hudson River and in like freshwater places, and they look crazy. And she strung them together onto a sort of like a hand shaker, and I was like, oh, like we have to use this on Green Things, the last song on the album, which is all about like plants and the sort of proliferation of botanical elements. But that shaker also showed up on New Moon and maybe on Black Locust as well. Like there were other things where like we would be putting a track on one song and think, oh, like we should put some of this on that other track as well. And so as we kind of layered in the recording studio, the album sort of the songs started to speak to one another in certain ways.
So how do you see this record maybe being different than past ones or a continuation of what you've done before?
Yeah, it's I would say that it is different in some of the approach in our recordings. Like some of the songs were not fully fleshed out before we went into the studio. We weren't quite sure how they would end up or what the instrumentation was going to be like, what the drums were supposed to sound like. We went in with some of these songs a little bit more open-ended than we had with previous recordings.
Yeah, there was some sitting with the mystery that was a little bit new in this
Yeah, I
recording
would say that.
session. There are some things that we explore, I think, a little further on this album than we have in the past. I think the texture of the songs, like there are a lot of songs that have a lot of texture that I think is new. I think of Scavengers and Green Things and New Moon and even Black Locust, where there's a lot of like continuous kind of sounds going through. We've had other songs where we explored drone in the past, even back to Devil May Care on our third album, Spells and Rituals. But we've done some more droney stuff on this album and experimenting and exploring polyrhythms and tempo, time signature stuff. Like that's always been a thing that we've been interested in. But I think
Yeah.
each album, like, it gets a little more extreme.
We definitely play with that. Yeah, we've played with that, and that develops. So that is kind of like, that is consistent with previous albums, but it is a progression,
Yeah, like so Gang of Two, you might be able to tell it goes back and forth between a 3-4, like a waltz time, and a 4-4 rock time kind of seamlessly. But it's for
Hopefully.
us, yeah, for us when we play that one live, it's a little like running a three-legged race that is occasionally a normal four-legged race, and then like
Yeah.
suddenly your legs are like together again. You've gotta but like you gotta keep it steady.
Yeah. And as far as the themes go, we have, our obsession with the natural world and kind of the supernatural ritualistic aspects of experience and life. And we also have, we have like these two characters coming up time and time again where they're like on the run, and they kind of, show up almost on every album, would you say? Yeah.
There's like a bunch of like you could trace from our earliest recording to now like the sort of on the lam on the run. Like there's Ocean City and there's Murderer and there's Drive into Idaho and there's Keep Moving and I'm sure I'm forgetting one, but Wrong Way Home.
Wrong Way Home.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so like over t like eventually, like when we put out enough albums, you'll be able to remix each of the albums and have just the On the Run songs, just the ancient mythology songs, just the
Right.
Poison songs.
Yeah, just the plant talk. Yeah, it's been kind of cool to see that, like, oh, this is that
Yeah,
song.
also like how are they doing? Like
Yeah.
are they
He's
okay?
still at it. Yeah, these two are still at it. I wonder where that comes from.
I wonder.
I love things like that because it does over time, yeah, you get to see how something evolves and you become surprised by it, or it becomes part of the anticipation. Other, in addition to like, okay, oh, this is a band I like and here's another 12 songs, but aha, here's another chapter in this story.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
it's like that for us too.
Yeah. When we start writing songs about killing each other, or like, we'll have to like explore that.
I know you can kind of interpret how we're feeling about the whole enterprise by like what the like two people on the run song is like. Like, are they feeling like weary? Are they feeling like gleeful, like they're getting away with something? Are they feeling regret or like they've made a terrible mistake? Like, those are all parts of the experience of being an independent touring musician.
Yeah, I don't think there's much regret on the last
No, this one. This
installation.
one we're
Yeah.
yeah, feeling good.
Feeling good.
You've been listening to a conversation with Elia Bisker and Jeff Morse of Charming Disaster. Their new album, The Double, is out May 16th. You can learn more about the duo via their official website, charmingdisaster.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torn Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We will see you next time.